Hi everybody, welcome to another episode of Kids Eat Toast Sometimes. No toast today, as advertised. It's in the title. You signed up for what you were getting. But I am with a very exciting guest tonight. I suppose I'm excited about all my guests, but then again, there wouldn't be a show if they weren't exciting. And she is an idea sharer, a content creator, and ultimately a budding entrepreneur. So a warm welcome to Izzy Hamilton Russell.
Hello.
Before I introduce you any further, Izzy, I think it's only fair to address your double barrel surname. I mean, that if you haven't seen on screen yet, she's obviously white and living on a farm. No, I'm only teasing, but how I've been keeping up with the Instagram stories. How's isolation been treating you?
Honestly, it's been such a privilege to be here. I've been really, really lucky, because I've been able to go out on the farm and have space to walk around and do all kinds of things, which has been really nice. Obviously, staying in Cape Town, I wouldn't have had that liberty. So it's been really nice. I think I've been on the farm now for 6 weeks, so it's time to go back to Cape Town and just see. I haven't left the house in 6 weeks, although the property is quite big, so it's definitely been, it's been better than it would have been in Cape Town, but I've had lots of fun, yeah.
For sure. No, and I mean, your Instagram's been on fire, and that's a huge part of, I suppose, what you're doing is content creation. So it's been nice to see. I don't want to waste too much time. I want to just dive in straight away to a project that you were busy with last year, Love Yoni. Would you care to elaborate?
Of course. Last year, I did the UCT Managerial Entrepreneurship course, and a part of this course, you come up with a business idea, and our group wanted to focus on social impact enterprise. And basically what that means is you create a business model, so a business model that's profitable, but while you're making profits, you essentially give back to the community and you develop the community socially. So Love Yoni was kind of embedded on these two ideas. We wanted to make profit, but we still wanted to give back to the community in a way. And I don't know if you want to dive right now into talking all about it, or should I introduce it?
Everything about it, the name, its conception, etc., etc. Because when I told my brother that my friend had started this business called Love Yoni, he just burst out laughing and he said it just means vagina. So love for you to share your whole idea and the creation behind it.
So the Sanskrit name for yoni, the direct translation actually means womb. So people have sort of given the name in a sense to meaning vagina, but the original Sanskrit name means womb. So essentially what Love Yoni is we were an online platform where you could go online to the platform and you could choose a box that delivered especially to your menstruational needs. So whatever kind of compilations of boxes that fitted to different kinds of girls after studies that we had done. You go online, you choose this box, and then essentially it would arrive at your door. And how we embedded the whole social impact side of it was that every one box that we that someone who could afford it purchased, we donated another box. So it was this whole, well, not another box per se, but enough to support a girl in an underprivileged area through her menstruational cycle. So it's the 15 pads, which is the United Nations standard of enough sanitary wear for a woman. So we go online, buy the box, and then we donate it to a nonprofit organization called Little Lambs, and they actually did the distribution for us. So this is the whole concept. And the idea Love Yoni came from essentially love from the womb. And our whole idea was to kind of essentially rebrand menstruation as this gift of giving life from the womb, as opposed to something that you dread every month.
Fantastic. It's a wonderful idea. And I remember speaking about it with you at length when we were both at UCT. And what I love about it is that in two parts, it's you are profit-centered, you are chasing profits, you're looking to be a successful business. But at the same time, there's that charity-based approach built into it. And then one thing I also want to focus on that you brought up now is rebranding the menstruation cycle. Because, I mean, that's yeah. It's a very topical issue. And, I mean, I was just... The first debate that comes to mind is the access to sanitary pads and women's health items. And where do you stand in that debate between the accessibility to condoms versus accessibility to women's health products?
I mean, I think it's quite evident why there's the accessibility of condoms versus the accessibility of women's sanitary products. It's because obviously all the men that are in power in our political system, something they're not thinking about. Men are thinking about themselves and they often find it difficult. So I think that's probably it is the reason why that happens. And obviously I think this is incredibly unjust because, you know, sex is a choice and female menstruation is not a choice at all. Essentially, you know, menstruation is the gift and the ability to give life. So menstruation at its core is the ability to give life to, you know, no one would be here if it weren't for menstruation. So I think there is a lot of unraveling that needs to be done in terms of how it's viewed in society.
For sure. And I think for the most part, I would agree with you. And almost just to play devil's advocate, I think the salience to the argument that condoms are free and accessible is that South Africa's got one of the highest HIV infection rates in the world, but at the same time, does that not make it okay that, like you've said, products that aid women through menstruation aren't readily available, which is just a massive concern. And what I also loved about what you said there is that it's not really in the realm of a man's conception. It's not what he's thinking about. So what are the ways, how do you think we can bring this into a mainstream society, a conversation that everyday people are having, guys and girls across all sort of age ranges?
I think one of the most important ways to approach this topic is not with a sense of anger towards the subject. And how I feel personally, the issue of menstruation should be approached is not with this sense of anger, because I don't think that through anger one really changes the way people think about things. I think it's with a kind of sensitivity and a deep understanding as to what menstruation really is about. I think there's a lot of misconception culturally to what menstruation really is about. You know, people think it's heathenistic or it's your worst time. You know, there are all these awful perceptions in certain religions. Women aren't allowed to be in the room when they're menstruating. And so I think this is just a sense of understanding that needs to be achieved around it, and not with anger or protest, but rather with education and like a soft approach to it, essentially. You know, not getting angry with people for not understanding, but trying to educate them just really what menstruation's about. It's the ability to give life, you know, and that it's in fact a great privilege, because if you can't menstruate, it means you can't give life. And personally, last year really changed my perception about it. Obviously, it's never been something that I've thought of as disgusting, but when I really looked at it for its essence and that its ability to give life, I kind of felt like it was a privilege to get it, because personally, I really want to be a mother, and that's something that's really important for me. So I don't know if that really answers the question, but...
No, I mean, I think that's a fantastic, fantastic response, because I think, like you said, any action that's based in anger is going to have quite a lot of trouble attracting a following and changing society. Whereas a more empathetic approach, an open conversation, which is based on understanding, is the way forward. Because if I look at the way it's already displayed today, I mean, being on your period, or it's referred to as like the Red River or Code Red, etc., etc., and it's got all these silly names that have actually just been invented so people don't have to confront what it is. And I think that's also very interesting.
And I think young girls and women themselves, there's, because of the stigma around it, and I think because of this silence that is, you know, that characterizes it. Both men and women don't really want to talk about it. And that's why there's not much that is done in terms of access to free sanitary wear for women. And I think just starting the conversation around it and normalizing it and not, you know, not making one feel like there's a problem or there's an issue with you because you have it, or it's something that you should be shameful of or embarrassed about, that, you know, it, I think that's really where it's going to start making a difference, well, hopefully.
No, for sure. I mean, I'd like to think of myself as a reasonably educated individual, and I thought PMS standard for post-menstrual sadness, and that's not even like me trying to crack wise or anything. That's for 23 years, as I really believed that was the definition. So I think that kind of highlights the massive issues around the topic, and which leads me to my next point, is that it's almost being used to vilify women in terms of my experience. So if you're in a bad mood or you kind of give me a stroppy response, I'll just, or not me, but I mean, people would laugh it off and go, oh, Izzy's just on her period, you know. And I think humor's great in terms of bringing it into and normalizing the conversation, but when it's degrading, it sends us backwards. And I think that's a common problem at the moment.
Of course. I think, like you said, you know, we shouldn't, you know, completely, there should be an element of humor every now and then. And of course, you know, along with menstruation, like, women's moods do change, and there is that element of it, and there are things, sometimes feelings that you don't understand because your body's doing certain things. And even recently I watched this talk about how you know, training for women and dieting for women has to be completely approached in a completely different way because of how the body works throughout menstruation. And there's certain 2 weeks of the month where you can't diet because your body's craving. And you have, and of course, there, like you said, there is that element of, you know, mood changing and that sort of thing. But the problem comes in when, you know, you're vilified or it's used as some kind of scapegoat to be horrible to you, which I really don't think is okay. Yeah.
Absolutely. I think just as a concept, your period or menstruation is terrifying. And I like how you've rebranded it. But if I were to bleed from my penis monthly, no one would be able to tell me just smile a bit more, or, you know, you should be better behaved, or you should be a bit more happy today. I would be a nightmare on, like, a rage bent because, and I find it so funny that guys who have been in relationship, guys that have dated girls, guys that have sisters, fail to see this as for the moment it is. And of course, we haven't even started to talk about the symptoms associated with your period, which are...
I mean, look, I even personally myself, there are times, you know, like, it's not a nice thing to go through. Like, as much as we, as much as I say, you know, it's a beautiful process, it's a gift of giving life. Like, it's a lot of the time it's not fun, and I guess that is something that a lot of, you know, men don't think about, like, putting yourself in the situation of women and, like, what it's really like. I can do everything you can do bleeding, which is quite a thought. Like, you know, like you were saying, if you had to, you know, bleed like that, like, it just, the thought even crosses your mind, makes you feel ill. But I guess it's different.
Yeah, women are much stronger than men. Like, I'll get a headache, and that could take me out for the afternoon. There's no happening. So, and then of course, I mean, it's also an intersectional issue in South Africa, because the problems you face with your period, or how people view it, are completely different to someone growing up in a township. And I think it was one of the stats that I read from one of your posts about a crazy figure of the percentage of girls and the amount of school they miss due to not having access to sanitary pads to actually get them through and let them attend school.
So it's an average of like 4 to 5 days a month that girls miss of school, which we sort of calculated it out as to how many days a year they'd be missing of school, which inevitably means that they would have essentially statistically dropped a symbol in their marks because of how much school they've missed, which is, first off, completely degrading. And it makes them feel shameful of this time of the month. And that's awful. And secondly, instead of using sanitary products like pads, which in South Africa, people of color use as a generalization from what the research we've done, they use things like newspaper, which is completely unsanitary and can actually lead to fertility problems. So that's really awful. So not only is it leading to fertility problems, it's leading to them having an issue with their education, almost dropping a symbol in their marks. And you can see the knock-on effect in the economy, you know, like if men are able to get ahead because they can get better marks, get into university, and women are being held back by something as basic as their menstruational needs, it will have a knock-on effect on the economy, obviously socially, and for the girl growing up feeling like something that she can't help is enabling her from, is disabling her from being able to attend school and get ahead in life. So that's an awful statistic.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even something that enters my mind when I think of the topic that certain lower income groups would be forced to use the likes of newspapers and that sort of stuff, which is completely, completely harrowing. And I think what you said there around losing a symbol is a very interesting line of inquiry for the open and free access to sanitary products in society, because it's almost in a country like South Africa where you've got systematic racism holding people back. Now you've got this powerful patriarchy, which lots of people chat about the patriarchy like it doesn't exist and it's just this myth. But I mean, these are the very building blocks of the patriarchy that people can get ahead basically just because they're men and don't have to consider coming to school or not coming to school because their dick's bleeding. So it's a very, very interesting way of starting to look at things, and I'm glad you brought it up.
I think it's interesting. Even never had to be in a situation where I've been bleeding and there's been nothing available for me to use. And I can't imagine how that must affect one's own like personal development, their psyche, their sense of self-worth. And the reality is in South Africa that pads are incredibly expensive, and tampons too. Tampons are actually cheaper than pads, and most of the people who are in underprivileged scenarios, they use pads because of a cultural stigma, and it's not seen as right to use tampons. So most of them use pads, which are actually more expensive than tampons, and they're really, really expensive. It's like 50 something rand for a bag, and for somebody who can't even afford to buy bread, pads, you know, like, they can't afford to buy them, and obviously it's a complete necessity. And it was up until only 2018 their government stopped taxing pads, so now it's considered an essential product like bread and milk. But before that, it was actually taxed quite heavily, which is ridiculous. So that is another element, like you were saying, of this deep embedded patriarchy, and it's just because women simply aren't represented and they don't have a voice in politics, so it's just something that men aren't even thinking about, you know?
No, I mean, I completely agree with this. I chatted earlier with Sihle and how we discussed that if a white person hasn't experienced or doesn't see fellow white people suffering, the process is normalized when they see a black person suffering. And it's almost similar in the sense that if a guy doesn't go through the spectrum of suffering that comes with your menstruation or the process and can't really understand it, well, then he's never going to be able to get on board. Yeah. But would you say there's definitely been a shift in the right direction in South Africa? You spoke about how the VAT got removed.
I mean, I think, so one of the reasons why our business model kind of got put into question is that there has been talk, and they have passed a bill, wanting to pass a bill, I think it's in fruition, of making free sanitary wear available to everyone in the public, which is obviously a great move forward for South Africa. But as we know, when you think about condoms, they're not readily available to everyone that needs them. So despite this being in place, obviously there's a lot of corruption in South Africa, and the way it's not going to be implemented, in the sense that, you know, women, if they need to get their pad, they're going to be able to get one. It's unlikely that it's going to happen. But that is a major move forward, and I think it's telling, hopefully, of where we're going to go. In Scotland, I think it was a month ago, they've passed a bill that there should be free sanitary wear for all women in Scotland, which is a major move. And I think that's really exciting. But it's also the, you know, Scotland is one of the only parliamentary systems where they have more women than men. So it's just telling why that, you know, that law was passed. It's interesting.
Yeah, it's not a great science if you've got people who understand your plight and they represent you, and then change will come about. But obviously, you left Love Yoni when you're at UCT ended. Was there any reason for that you didn't feel you could continue it?
I think one of the most pressing reasons was that the group that I started it with weren't really that driven by the idea itself. And also, I think all of us had personal goals and ways in which we saw ourselves going in the future. And Love Yoni didn't necessarily like line up with that. So that was one of the, you know, first reasons. Second reason, and I think it talks to one of the talking points we wanted to talk about today, is when starting a business, like, what are the things that you want to consider? And I think personally, one of my biggest reasons, one of my biggest lessons last year, was that entering into a business or starting any business, it's not so, what is obviously so much about the idea, but twofold, I think it's about the people and the team that you started with. And it's essential that you have a team of like-minded people who are motivated, proactive, and have the same vision that you have, because starting a business is as hard as it is on its own. And if you don't have the group of like-minded people that you're able to, you know, flog along with you and really drive the process, it makes it agonizing. So I think that's one of my major lessons from last year.
I hope that none of your group members ever watch this, because you just put them.
I will tell them openly. It's put them over.
No, but that's, and I think that's a key aspect of not only our generation, but a business in general, and the art of collaboration. Especially, I found it very, very taxing amongst creatives, and I can only imagine what you must have felt it like amongst commerce students.
Yeah. I think it was most certainly a challenging process, but I think I've come out better than for it, because I've learned the art of delegating, and like I said, I've learned how to analyze people, which has been an important lesson that I'll take forward with me forever. So I don't take, you know, it was a learning curve for sure, but I wouldn't do it again.
Yeah, okay. No, and which it also leads me to my next sort of question, and as we start to slowly wrap things up, what does the future hold? Are you interested in being involved in NGOs or something similar to what you propose with Love Yoni, where you're profit driven but ultimately have a altruistic ending? What sort of line are you thinking?
So for sure, I do want to start my own business, and that I am very certain about. I do want to own my own business, but I see myself doing that probably in the next 5 or so years. I have a plan to move to London. I was supposed to be there already, but because of Rona, that has postponed. So I do want to still live in London. And my idea is to work in corporate life just for a bit to kind of learn the ins and outs of business. And hopefully get a bit involved in consulting. We'll see. I'm not sure. But business and business strategy is what really interests me. And being able to, like, you know, optimize a business through your creative thought processes and how you strategize and, you know, maximize its efficiency. That's something that really interests me. But how I want to use that is then use that to start my own social impact enterprise, because ultimately I feel like that's the way one can change or make a difference in this world. There's only so much like shouting and screaming or, you know, talking about an issue that one can do. It's, I feel like, you know, when you have the power to empower other people through your business, one's really able to make a change. So I hope to empower other women and give back in ways that I can through my enterprise that I own one day.
But no, Izzy, that's fantastic. Did you ever feel under undue pressure to start your own business because you were a woman and had to see yourself represented?
So there's definitely a part of me that's always wanted to be this powerful woman entrepreneur, that's a boss ass bitch that's making waves and doing things in society. She wants to be a mum, and I want to have my own kids and have a family and a home and be able to be a part of my children's life, like my mother was. And that's something I've always really, really wanted to do. So there's this sort of dancing between the two and thinking about how I can marry these two things. I've always said that I want to start a business and get it like going and be really successful and then sell it, raise kids, and then go back to business after I've done that. I do want to be a woman in the workforce as an entrepreneur, but I also want to be a mum.
No, it's an interesting point. And I said with my mother, et cetera, people I've dated, it was also a similar ideology. And it's almost quite unfair that because of your biological makeup, that this is a decision that you have to be faced with, or a confrontation that you have to make, whereas it's a lot easier for men. But at the same time, I think if you look at parenting relationships and structures within households, I think more often than not, Mother Dearest comes up trumps when it comes to relationships with their children, which is also something you can't really attach monetary value to, which I think is sometimes overlooked.
I think, to be honest with you, it's a great privilege to be able to be a mother and to have children. And I think there are ways around making sure that you can be successful in your career. And of course, there are going to be setbacks when you know, like there's this argument that mother and pay the paycheck between women and men is because women have children and they come first and that sort of thing. And obviously there is some truth in that. And it is problematic that women are being paid less because they have other interests or whatever. But personally, I feel like it's just a great privilege to be able to be a mum. And it's something I'm really excited about. So that's not like a fight that I'm trying to fight, if that makes sense.
No, completely. I like it. And last question from me, and it's kind of run of the mill, but I'm quite interested to hear your answer. What would a short little message to younger Izbay growing up be?
Sure. I think that I should relax and not be so hard on myself in terms of like what I achieve or what I do, that I will do it, and that looks don't really matter, because that's something I have like thought about my whole life, and it was something I felt very insecure about for a very long time. And honestly, the more I've learned to accept myself as how I am and embody my own body, the happier I've felt. And the times in my life where I've been more insecure, obviously, about certain things or the way I look. Just learning to be happy, embody myself and my own thoughts, and that my own outlook on life is the thing to be treasured, and that I'm going to be able to do it.
That's wonderful, Izzy. I think you, in one or a couple of sentences, you just became a feminist icon. Well, one of my feminist icons. So I love that answer. It's fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
But I have tried to make these shorter. We could have spoken for hours, so we're going to leave it there. So thank you very much for coming on and chatting about something that's not always chatted about. So thanks a lot, Izzy.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity. I really, really enjoyed it. And it's been an absolute privilege to talk to you. And thank you so much.
Cool. Thanks, Isbeth.
That's it. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this, share it with your friends, your mother, your ex. Share it with your matches on Tinder. Hell, share it with your dog. Even if you hated it, share it with the people you hate. We'll be back next week. Thanks so much.